to know a little bit about me, you have to kind of look at my past. I came to understand that I love the mountains. The mountains are a place of refuge for me, a place that I found myself, who I was. I didn't realize this until I went to school in the mountains. I found myself up in Boone, up at Appalachian State. And the mountains just become a part of you when you're there. There's a place, if you know anything about Boone, I know you know about Howard's Knob. It's a beautiful spot overlooking pretty much the entire campus of the university, and you can see for miles and miles at the top of Howard's Knob. I wasn't the only student that made my way up there. There were students that made their way up to Howard's Knob on a daily basis. But it was a spot that gave us great enlightenment, gave us great sense of worth. Because you went up there and life as you knew it kind of faded away. In the still small moments of the wind blowing across the mountaintop, you could see the rustle and bustle of everybody below you in Boone, but it didn't affect you. You were there, and you were a part of something different. Also, taking my family on a few occasions, we like to head up just a little bit further south of Howard's Knob, down 105 to a place called Grandfather Mountain. And if you've ever been up on Grandfather Mountain, it's a beautiful sight to behold. Again, we've taken all of our kids there at least once, some a few times. But you go on the Mile High Swinging Bridge and you go off on the other side, and it's almost like you're on the side of a mountain. There are no walls or barriers to keep you from moving in the wrong direction, which is down. But you don't want to go that far. But it is a beautiful spot. And again, it's this panoramic view. The mountains are spots and places where you can see the world in a whole new light. The scripture we're talking about today brings us to the mountainside, takes us up the mountain. Jesus and his friends, a couple of his disciples, three of his disciples actually, go up on a mountain. We want to read that today. It's in the Gospel of Mark. Mark 9, verses 2 through 9. Those of us in circles of religion or theology or homiletics know that this is the transfiguration. Okay? And we'll talk about that as we move forward. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for he was terrified. He was in fear. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. And as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until the Son of Man had risen from the dead. Thus ends the reading of God's Word. I said to Chris the other day, I said, "I'm going to tackle the transfiguration." He said, "Better you, not me." I said, "I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it a whirl." The Transfiguration is a story that not many of us want to take part in. because we don't understand it. If you have a rational mind and you think a certain way, this is a hard story to get. I was kind of amazed. Friday, somebody, a cohort of mine, somebody I think very highly of in this same realm of teaching and academia and whatnot, he said to the point, he said something about, I would go to the mountaintops to find the answers, but I know I wouldn't find them, is what he said on his Facebook post. And I was like, Transfiguration, mountaintop, got to ask him what's going on. I said, if you can't find it in the mountaintop, then where can you find it? I give you his response. And this goes to what a lot of us think about this story. He said, we should just group the transfiguration with the talking donkey, God trying to kill Moses, and Jacob wrestling with the vampire with weird stories and just move on. That's what he said. I was like, great. You didn't help me at all, buddy. But anyway, that's the story we're looking at today. We're trying to understand something that is not understandable. It's something that is so out there. A lot of times people will use this story in a very fundamentalist way to try to prove who Jesus was. It's like an evangelist taking the Bible and you see him on the streets and waving that Bible in the air telling you what you got to do, how you're supposed to live your life, and we got proof right here in this story. That's what the transfiguration sounds like, and people use it in that way all the time and in that capacity. But I think there's a little bit more to it than that. Trying to use this story as proof is not the way we need to look at it. And it's not what makes it a difficult story, because it's irrational and doesn't make sense to us. I think why it doesn't make sense to us is because it's trying to describe a present God, the present glory of God, that God is present in our world. That's not the world I see. I don't see a present glory of God. Let's talk about glory of God. What does that mean? What does it mean? A good dictionary definition of the term glory always invokes great honor and great praise. A good dictionary definition tells us that glory has to do with radiant beauty, has to do with splendor. Sometimes it even includes bright lights or halos. Glory. The present glory of God. What makes this a tough story to discuss in these walls is that we don't see a world of splendor, of radiant beauty. We don't see a world with halos and wonderful things that happen. I don't see great honor in this world. What makes this a difficult story is that it isn't real to us. When three young people are killed, shot in their own apartment because of a parking space, my mind does not go to Hallelujah Chorus. When innocent victims are being decapitated because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time and they don't identify with certain beliefs, my mind does not go to splendor or praise. When one of the most popular movies out this weekend has to do and is something that popularizes abuse, rape, I'm talking about 50 Shades of Grey, I don't see a world of splendor. I don't see a time to praise. When people with different skin tones, religious preferences and cultural norms have to justify their whereabouts, have to justify what they wear, what they look like, what they believe, have to look behind them because they're scared for safety? I don't see it. I don't see the presence of God's glory. When individuals who sincerely and wholeheartedly love one another have to hide all traces of that love simply because it doesn't conform to social ideology, that's not glory. The glory of God's not around us. When individuals and families and corporations and congressmen and women, when they are doing whatever it takes to enhance their bottom line at the expense of being moral, ethical human beings, I don't see halos. I don't feel that epiphany. Only self-centeredness. Our world is covered. That's what makes this hard. This is speaking of a present God, a God that is around us and is here. We don't see this. In our world, it's chaos. We're in flux. Oppression and greed abound. Ugliness. But I've tackled the story, and I'm going to continue because it's important. And one of the things I bring up in school all the time is helping people understand it's not only about the content, it's about the context in which it's delivered. What's important is not only the story, the words of that story, but what else comes around and flows around with it. There's a lot of reasons why this is an irrational story. Glowing white robe, the man glowing from within. They're on a mountain, and there are two individuals who have been passed for hundreds, if not thousands of years, Moses and Elijah. Visions. A booming voice from the cloud. Irrationally, this story does not make sense. It sounds great, and it's wonderful, but it's not just about the words of the story. It's about the context of that story. So, of course, the storyline is weird. It kind of throws off most of us progressive-minded individuals. It kind of makes us say, well, let's not even talk about it, because you kind of have to have a literalist approach anyway if you're going to try to bring forth the fundamental idea that this proves that God existed in the man Jesus. However, there's more to it than the actual event. The transfiguration helps us to see through the proverbial haze. The chaos that is our world, and it provides us with a vision. So maybe it's not the story itself, but it's the metaphor of the story. What it's giving us some other information. Visions, let's talk about those. Visions help us to see the possibilities in life. They help us to see the possibilities in life. Visions help you to see past the hindrances or problems that exist in your life and see truth. Visions have that power. We need those visions in our life. We need visions to help with our marriages. We need visions to help with our children. We need these visions to help with our families and our relationships. Visions help us to find our destiny in life and helps us to understand God's relationship with us. So mountaintop experiences, these grand moments, can happen in our world. They can. I've been a part of one. Been a part of several, actually. But one of them has to do with this grandiose moment where I was going through a lot. It was my first semester in seminary. Uncertainty of, should I be here? Is Vanderbilt the place for me? Am I able to do it? We're in the midst of finals. It was December. Everything was hard. I tried to take on too much as it was. 15 hours of coursework as opposed to what they thought should be better, 9 or 12. But I said, I can do it, no problem. I was silly, but I did it. I was going through a lot that time. I just met my now wife the summer before. I'd left her and moved 8 hours away after I'd just met her. So life was difficult. I did not know what I was doing. I was sitting in the computer lab working on the last paper that I had to get in. And it was probably about 12:30 at night. And I was just going through the motions. That was before everybody had computers in their home, right, or in their pocket. we had to go to computer labs, these places that have lots of computers in the room, so on campus. But I was in the computer lab, and a few of my friends who were there, they said, you know what? I heard there's a meteor shower. I heard there's something going on tonight about 2 or 3 in the morning. So let's go see it. And I was like, sure, why not? I was like, I'm trying to finish up this paper, but I'm done. Okay, I'm done. I'll go. They said, we can't see it in the middle of Nashville. We just can't see it. So we got to go. Let's just go out. We'll go out the Natchez Trace Parkway. And we'll just keep on driving until we get far enough away that we can actually see the meteor shower. I was like, okay, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. We're going to be driving an hour away to try to get out of Nashville. Just to try to see something that I didn't know what it was going to be. And we got out on a bridge. And if you can imagine getting out on a bridge, you know, there's a lot of hills in the middle of Nashville, or in the middle of middle Tennessee, but not a lot of mountains. So we didn't have a mountain we could go to. But we got away. And we found ourselves on this bridge at 2 o'clock in the morning. And if you can see that, you can imagine what you could see filling the sky. No lights to get in the way. But it was this raining of this beautiful, beautiful scene of these stars just shooting across the sky. And we just had full view of it, full radiant view. There were probably about, I would say, 50 people on that bridge, but every single one of them seemed like they were a mile away. Because I was in a trance. I was in this moment of this place where the hustle and bustle of all these questions that I had, this uncertainty that I had, this chaos that was surrounding my entire existence, just melted away. It was gone. And of course, I finished my studies. I married the beautiful Miss Laura. And we're still married after 15 years, coming up in May. It had a profound impact on my life. It was a moment that I will never forget. So I'm like, yes, we can have these profound moments, these mountaintop experiences. But one of the things that I keep coming back to that makes this so impossible is those are so far and few between. We don't get those mountaintop moments all the time, do we? And then it came to me. I was sitting, I couldn't sleep on Friday morning. Hey, I had to go into work being at the school at 9 o'clock. But anyway, I knew I had to write the sermon on the transfiguration of all things. And it was 5 o'clock, and I was up, moving around. Of course, I'm dealing with some sinus stuff, so I was coughing. And I found myself waking up my little Addie bear, 2 years old Addie. And she kind of got antsy, started crying. And I went in and I talked to her. I said, you okay? Are you okay? She just kept crying. So I had to kind of calm her down. And actually had to lay with her to get her to go back to sleep. For about 10 minutes. Wasn't a problem. I didn't have any problems with that. But in that moment, I knew that these mountaintop experiences do not just happen on a mountain. They happen in the midst of chaos. Because then I started thinking about, well, what else? What else has caught my attention that I can see these mountaintop experiences happening in my everyday life? And there it was. My wife and I were sitting there on Thursday night about to watch this really crazy movie, okay? Wild movie, scary movie. It's something that I still struggle with, but it's called Gone Girl. So I don't know if you've seen that, read that book, whatnot, but I struggled with the movie the other day. But as soon as we told Tate that, you know, we were going to watch a, quote, scary movie, He said, well, I'm gone. Okay. He said, I'm gone, Tate. I was like, oh, okay, he's gone, Tate. But I realized in that I've got three beautiful children who bring moments like that impact my life and give me a chance to see through the haze. You get a chance to see those other things. And I can't leave out my daughter, Avery. I've already said something about the other two. And all I can say about Avery is, if you know her, if you know Avery, she is she has a dominant kind of aura to her. She believes that she can control things. She can control everything, including her sister and her brother and her dad and her mom. And sometimes she succeeds. Sometimes she's able to do it. But that's who she is. But it's that personality. It's my son's kind of weariness of the unknown. It's my other daughter's just kind of sense of being there and being present. We see these mountaintop experiences every day. So yeah, the transfiguration sounds weird. The transfiguration sounds unbelievable. But the truth be told, they happen every day. We just have to open our eyes. We just have to see them for what they are. Yes, chaos exists. Yes, ugliness exists. Yes, greed exists. And violence and evil exist. However, it does not take away the fact that the truth exists. The story depicting the transfiguration is unique. It is weird, as my friend calls it. But it's not in our best interest to throw it away and say it's worthless. We are in the world that needs its vision. Because what the transfiguration helps us to do is to see past those things. We need the vision that comes from the transfiguration. We need its clarity. We need its sense of removing the haze that exists around us. All of these things, greed, corruption, untimely and unnecessary deaths, oppression of all kinds, they exist. The Jesus of the Transfiguration that glows is not necessarily an attempt to claim proof in the present glory of God, as most want to claim, that it proves that Jesus was God, but probably more of a metaphor for truth that comes from God in these moments that are our transfiguration. It's an attempt to help give us visions of what the world should be around us and what really is there, the truth that lies beneath. Let us open our eyes and see those visions.